In 1964, Granada Television brought together a group of seven-year-olds from all over the country and from all walks of life.
I'm going to work in Woolworths.
I read the Financial Times.
They talked about their dreams, their ambitions, and their fears for the future.
Everything flew up in the air. It all landed on my head.
For nearly half a century, in a unique, groundbreaking series of films, we have followed their lives every 7 years. They are now 56.
Ever since the 80s, when so many of my listeners were in diapers, I remember going to see, I think it was must have been 28 Up, Michael Apted's third or fourth installment of the series that he's been doing since he started interviewing a group of seven-year-old children in England, and he revisited their lives every 7 years. It started off as a TV project. I don't know if they were planning on doing them from the very beginning for this many years. Believe it or not, I'm sure you've heard of the 7-Up series, but they are now up to 56. These kids are now 56 years old. And anybody who's been going back and seeing these films every 7 years, you're now a stakeholder. And it's an incredible experience to return every 7 years, because you yourself, as a viewer, have aged along with them. So 56 Up is in theaters, at least in New York City right now, and it is moving across the country, and I reckon we'll be in a theater hopefully near you. Besides the Up series, Michael Apted is also a Hollywood filmmaker. Among many films that he has made, his roster includes, just to name a few, Coal Miner's Daughter, Gorillas in the Mist, Thunderheart. He's made The World Is Not Enough. That was his James Bond flick, and more. It's so great to have Michael Apted on Filmwise Radio, and what's more great is that returning as my co-host is the lovely Kristen McCracken. It's an honor to welcome Michael Apted to Filmwax Radio. Well, first of all, let's get out of the way the awe and all that business, because it's not professional. But I've been watching these films personally since, I think the first time I went to see one in the series was 28 is my guess. Mm-hmm. 28, because that would have been in the 80s, right?
Yeah, mid 80s. That was the first time I brought the films here, was 28.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So people said, I was working here. I'd moved to Los Angeles, and people said, "What's this film you keep going back to do?" And they said, "You should bring it over here." I said, no, I don't want to, because Americans wouldn't understand it. Not that they're not perfectly smart and whatever, but I said, they wouldn't understand the context. What's the difference between a comprehensive, a private, a public school? So I showed it to a few Americans, and they said, "You should bring it here." And it was an epiphany for me, because then I realized, it had a value beyond living in the United Kingdom. It had kind of values about which were universal, the things that we all go through. Birth, marriage, death, the whole lot. That had a broader scope than just about the English class system or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it was a big moment for me when it took seed here.
It really did too, didn't it?
Yeah, it ran for a year at the Bleecker.
Can you imagine?
I know.
Can you imagine it now?
It was only a small theatre, but even so, a year is something, isn't it? I've got this great picture. It says 28 Up and 8.5. one of my favourite films, so that was a thrill to be doubled with Fellini.
What a thrill. We just had lunch and we were both curious about when every 7 years when this rolls around, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings? Are you in anticipation of the...
Well, it's strange. First of all, it has to be said that every 7 years, Granada Television, ITV, whatever they call themselves, step up and do it. Mm-hmm. That's probably the only reason we're still here, that we've had a company that supported it from the very beginning. How often do you get that? But as far as I'm concerned, I've gone through a kind of change that I noticed, that each film seems to be different in tone. which led me to believe that the less I prepared for it, the less work I did going into it, the better it was. Because if I prepared it and looked at all the old films and all that, I'd have all that baggage in my brain. I mean, I know what we're going to talk about up to a point, and I know the classic things that I'm going to have to put in the film from the past films. But what I don't want to do is just make it a follow-up from the last one. So we discussed this in 49, so let's discuss it now in 56. Because that, I think, kind of suffocates it. Whereas, you know, I was surprised by how this one turned out. I didn't think it was going to be like this at all. So I had that element of surprise. I try not to predetermine it or to guide them in some way that I think they should be guided, i.e. the participants, the interviewers. I think it's much better to go in with a blank slate and have a conversation with them about what their lives are up to at the moment and what's important and what isn't important. And, you know, then I might get something unexpected, which I think I sort of did this time. So I do very little preparation, which sounds idle, but I find it's better to have a blank slate rather than a whole load of congestion up there trying to remember who said what in 35 or who said what and so forth.
Are you in touch at all in between the filmings?
I mean, it's a bit, this makes you throw up, but I mean, we're like a family, really. I mean, some I'm close to, some I'm not. Some come and stay with me in California, some I never see from 1 7 years to the other, you know, and it just, as I said, we are, you know, we are united by blood, really, because, you know, we've known each other for 50 years now. And so it's, you know, just some I'm close to, some I'm less close to. Mm-hmm. Some like me, some don't like me, and all that sort of stuff. So it's very, there's no formula to it. I gave up the whole notion of being objective, and I'd only see them once every 7 years. Mm-hmm. I gave that up as a bad idea early on. So there's no pattern to it. It's just as it falls.
You definitely took the position of it being of an interview, as opposed to a verite type of series.
Yeah.
How could you avoid not creating relationships, right?
Yeah, I mean, however I did it, whether I'd done it as a fly on the wall or not, it would still have been a relationship,
but,
I think.
But maybe if it had been more of a fly on the wall, perhaps it would have felt more that you weren't participating actively in their story. Yeah.
It might not have had the richness, and they might not have felt the loyalty to it, I think,
no.
If you weren't.
But absolutely. Also, I had an instinct about it early on that, because I would, once we'd done 14, you know, which we had no intention of doing when we started, once we had done 7+7, I realized that here was a big idea and this could really go on. I had this feeling that the more simple I made each episode, both visually, stylishly, and in content, the easier it would be to put it all together as I began to assemble vast generations of it. I mean, I've got 8 generations of the film in this, and I realized that my biggest asset was the face, the human face. Watching that change would be my asset. So I deliberately drew back from doing elaborate sequences, from doing visual sequences, from doing fly-on-the-wall sequences, because I thought, how am I going to be able to use this as it comes on? And I think that was instinct. It was kind of boring, in a sense, if you talk about it, and people say, you know, it's very old-fashioned the way I shoot it, but I decided on a style and I've kept to that style, and I think it's helped me, made it easier to put the generations together, which is really what it's all about. I mean, that's my greatest asset. That's what I've got that no one else has ever had. So I had this instinct, and the best way to serve that was to keep it simple. And had I done much more visual, active films, I think it would have been impossible to have counterpointed the various generations. So it had to be kind of interview based with a bit of B-roll and me being a kind of a presence in it, so I could in some ways link the generations and I'd be part of the generations rather than abstracted from it.
Simon was brought up in a children's home, the only child of a single parent.
They say, where's your father then? You know, when your mum's out at work instead of your father. And I just tell him I ain't got one.
See, I can get on well with my mother sometimes. We talk very well with each other, but it's sometimes not quite as mother and son, sort of more like friends.
When he was 35, Simon's mother died of cancer.
There were so many things I never actually said to my mum that just things that, you know, you think about afterwards, it's too late because they're not there anymore.
What sort of thing?
The film is based, relies on certain tensions to work as well as it does. One of those tensions is that of looking backward and forward. And this particular segment, it's clearly a looking back for a lot of the characters. In other words, they're now have the lives that they created for themselves. Right. You know, in those middle films, specifically, I guess, 35 through 49, yeah, there was always a kind of still future. Grappling. Yeah.
And is that what you meant by you were surprised by what happened this time? Or what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm not going to tell you because I don't want to give the film away. But yes, I was surprised by it. But it leads me, I always look at my own life when I'm looking at this. I become an audience as well. And I'm thinking as I get older, I'm beginning to get much more panic-stricken about the future. Not about dying as much, but about the future, about how long will I be able to work? How long will I be able to live like I've lived, you know, financially and all this? And, you know, that doesn't seem at 56 to have clicked in yet with them. They are who they are and they're comfortable with it. But I haven't sensed at the moment from them a panic for the future, which I thought there might be there. I mean, there's a lot of panic about the present, which talks about the political content of the film, which I've always been very careful with, that I don't objectify it, that it isn't about external events, the politics. I mean, the film's been criticized in some way that you never know really where you are. If you looked at 49, you wouldn't know what else was going on in the world, just these people. But I've always felt that the politics of the film are those people's lives. And if the political situation is bearing down very heavily on their lives, then that's the politics of the film. And in this generation, it has been. When you get to 56 and the economy is being squeezed in the United Kingdom and indeed here, and is likely to get a good deal worse, both in the United Kingdom and here, then it becomes a very important part of their lives. And so there is more politics in this installment than there has been in before. Because what you're saying is true, that when you're 35, 42, 28, there's a big future there. And you're not so much worried about the details of that future. You know there's a future out there.
We're speaking with Michael Apted, the filmmaker, and his new documentary, 56 Up, is the latest of eight now installments.
Yeah. In this eight generations of them.
Staggering work.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot? I mean, obviously, from Coal Miner's Daughter to more recent films that you've made, including one of the James Bond installations. And I mean, is this your life work?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's why I do. It's unique. No one's ever done it, and I don't think anyone else will ever do it. The business being what it is, you know, the entertainment business is now totally unstable. When I started, it was very stable in the early 60s, and you could imagine a company, in a sense, having the confidence to project doing a series of films into the distant future. You can't imagine that now in the climate we live in. So I think I'm most attached to it of all the things I've done because of that, because it was unique. It wasn't that I sat down and had a brilliant idea. It was all an accident from the beginning. But because it's so original and unusual, I think that's why I'm so attached to it.
Can you tell us a little bit about that accidental beginning? Because I don't know if a lot of people know the origins of the project.
Yeah, well, it started out as a one-off film. It was an idea. English society in 1963, 64 seemed to be changing. We were swamped with, you know, pop culture, with the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, fashion, whatever, great plays, films and all this. And the idea was, the English class system, which had been pretty rigid, was that changing as well as the cultural life of the United Kingdom? And this film, 7 Up, it was decided, rather than just talk about it, why don't we bring some 7-year-old kids in from different social backgrounds and have them talk about their lives and see what that'll throw up? And of course, it was kind of both shocking and funny. It threw up the shock. Yes, the English class system is very alive and doing very nicely, thank you. By that I mean, if you were born into a certain class, then you knew where you would be going to school, you probably knew where you go to university, you probably know what career you're going into. Mm-hmm. If you came from an unempowered class, the working class, you probably hadn't a clue about any of that. and that probably had to affect your options in life. And that's a pretty chilling idea. And that was clearly true in 7 Up, but it was going to be just one snapshot of Great Britain at that period, end of story. And then, embarrassingly, we never occurred to us for about 5 years, why don't we go back and see what's happened to them? It seems so obvious now, but it wasn't then. Mm. And then when we did go back, you know, we could see something big was on here, and this was something that was worth pursuing, but that's why it was an accident. We never sat down and said, let's follow these people's lives every 7 years. That would have been genius.
Mm-hmm. So now you've seen, as you said, 50 years of this of these people's lives, and in turn, the British society as a whole. So I believe it's Andrew in this film who says something about how the class system has really been replaced by a financial disparity system, basically. Do you agree with that? What have you seen in your own country? And do you think that your series does reflect what's happened in Britain?
Yeah, I think so. I think the old class system became less rigid and became less important than a new class system, very much based on an American class system, economically based, took over from it. There is still privilege and underprivilege and a class system, but I think it's driven by different forces than it was, you know, when we started in 63, and it's been a sort of slow process. But, you know, my film doesn't represent England now in any sense at all. Had I started the film 10 years later, 20 years later, it would be an entirely different film. And the film sort of grew up with it. I mean, it ceased to be so much about the class system and people's options, you know, what people could expect out of life and what people could get out of life. It became more really about the individuals, about the characters of people, you know, how they deal with the issues that face all of us wherever we live on the planet. So it kind of became depoliticized as it grew up, the film.
Before I mentioned, the film has these tensions in it. Another one of the tensions that comes to mind is of their involvement. It seems as you get the majority of your subject coming back time in and time out, but they feel compelled to also rebel to some degree.
Yeah, they do, and I think it's good. I think they make good points, and I try and answer them. You know, I think since it is so much part of their lives, I think it's good to give them the room, the airtime, if you want, to talk about it and to be transparent about it. I don't agree with their points. I mean, there was a very long sequence in 49 up between me and Jackie when she really shouted at me about, you know, how I make decisions. I give it the life that I think it should be and not what she's lived and all this. And, you know, she's right, but also she's wrong, because every film you've made is someone's judgment. It's someone's point of view, and this has to be my point of view. Someone's got to decide what shot follows the next shot and what goes in and what doesn't go in. So, you know, if you're in any film, whether it's a little, you know, home movie, or if you do a documentary, or you do a $300 million movie, mm-hmm. there's some vision at the heart of it, and someone has to make choices. And so that was my point with her. But they do have very valuable points. I mean, there's a very good section in this film. Nick, who, you know, left England to go to America, talks about the basically absurdity of trying to condense someone's life into 15 minutes.
Right.
And yet he makes the valuable point that it's not just about him so much.
They represent.
It's about somebody, him as a representative. So it has an iconic rather than a personal value.
He seems to have gotten it in that rate.
Yeah. I mean, they're all good points. And I think it's...
Right.
And as we've all grown up with it, and particularly in this film, I just felt much stronger sense of ownership. I mean, they would tell me what they want to do. I mean, in the old days, I would come and say, we'll film this, we'll film that, we'll do this, and we'll do that, and they would do it. But now they say, no, we don't want to do that. We want to do this and that. And I think it's more because, you know, I have to admit there is, you know, a sort of residual anger in them about it all, because they were railroaded into it. I mean, they didn't make a decision at 7 to be in it. And that was the school, that was their parents.
But how did you select the children, and were the parents involved? And they certainly didn't know they were signing them up for a lifetime of being involved in this.
No, we didn't know either. Right. You know, as I said, it was done incredibly quickly. I mean,
but it's good advice. If you are going to do that, don't let them know ahead of time.
Well, now people are so savvy, you see, they'd figure it all out.
It's true.
But in those days, you know, we didn't know what we were doing either. And so You know, and I chose the children in 3 weeks. You know, now you go, you know, be sweating it out for months, doing tests on them and all this. We just brought them in and did it, which is amazing, really, because they weren't really chosen particularly. And yet they all turned out so interesting, which leads me to believe that everybody has a story to tell. Everybody has, you know.
Very true. Right.
And there's an anger about it, the fact that they were railroaded into it. And, you know, they never had a choice. And then when they became kind of savvy and aware about it, they were stuck in it, you know, and it was harder to get out than to stay in, as it were. So there is that still.
I did notice that there is an occasionally, there is an expectation from some of the folks that, you know, that you help preserve their dignity. And I think it was Tony who was really stung when you said that some of the things that he was saying sounded racist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see that he was xenophobic, but for you to call, he was really seemed personally to be stung that you should say that. Like, your opinion matters so much.
I don't know whether it was the right thing to do or not, to be honest with you. I mean, he agreed to let it stay in the film. I mean, you know, they have quite considerable power, because as it's a longitudinal, you know, I want to go back next time. So if I mess them around, lie to them, if I, you know, mislead them, then I take the risk that they'll say, forget it, because I think the whole thing is built on trust. But that was a pretty scary moment. Even when I was asking it, I was thinking, should I ask it? But I thought, I have to. And he was disturbed by it and the answer, but I thought he answered it well. And so he agreed to let it stay in. But there are these moments. And again, there's a lot of self-editorializing, because if they don't want to talk about sex or race or something, then there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, if they fire you, I mean, you know, they could always get Michael Moore now,
I guess. That's true. That's right. Be fired. I haven't heard that one. Will I be fired?
Sacked. I'm
sacked.
Sorry.
You alluded to the fact that you do make choices and you decide what goes in and what goes out, and there is a creative process to it. Does it feel as creative as your narrative work, or does it feel...
It feels slightly more creative, because in a sense you write the script. I mean, you go out there, whatever the documentary is, you know, you go out there and you harvest material. And then when you have the material, then you really shape it. I mean, when you're doing a movie, I don't write my movies. So, sorry, my job really is to bring it to life as much as I can. So I do get a slightly more creative buzz. I mean, they're both difficult and they're both different sets of muscles. So that's why I enjoy doing both. You know, they both have their strengths and they both have their weaknesses as ways of telling stories. But, you know, I think I do feel somewhat more creative, at least in the shaping of the story, doing a documentary than a movie.
So Peter had disappeared for a while, and he came back this time. How many... I mean, I didn't go back and rewatch Seven Up to see...
Shame on you. Oh.
but you do a really nice job of, you know, giving us the context in each film, but... Did people drop out over time?
No. The only one who's dropped out full time dropped out after 21, and he, ironically, he's a documentary filmmaker.
Interesting.
Go figure that baby out. He was one of the three posh boys. Uh-huh. He's the one who looks like, with the Henry V haircut.
Yeah.
Charles. Became a documentary filmmaker. He lived by the sword, but he wasn't prepared to die by the sword.
Interesting.
Shame on him. But all the others, I mean, I've lost them once or twice. Simon, the African guy, mm-hmm. I lost him once. And John Brisby, the posh guy, the lawyer, I lost him once. But they come back. But the women have stayed loyal to the whole thing. Just the issue was I never picked enough women, because that was the time in 1964. You know, one of the catch lines in Seven Up is, you know, the politician and the trade union leader of the year 2000 is now 7 years old. And it was unthinkable that women would hold those positions. But it didn't take very long to prove that wrong. But that was the thinking at the time. And I bitterly regretted it. Not that I blame myself, but because I've contested, and a lot of my movies, I think, demonstrated how I feel that in my life, the biggest social revolution has been the changing role of women in society. For someone who didn't grow up in, you know, civil rights or Vietnam, grew up in the United Kingdom. And a lot of my movies reflect that, but in some ways, this, the most important of my films, doesn't reflect it, mm-hmm. because we missed out at the beginning of the story.
I think it's Andrew's wife, right? She talks about some regrets, and it's nice that I loved Sue's story and how she's
doing
the minister.
Well.
Yeah, the college minister.
But I missed out on all that. You know, I mean, you can only beef it up to a certain degree with people who I didn't film before they were 28 or 35 or something like that. But
it looks like the next installment could be a kind of a tough one, in the sense that now they'll have moved into the next phase of their own lives, clearly. And most will have lost parents and will have moved into that next generation.
Yeah. By all means. I mean, they'll be 63. How many 63-year-olds have got parents still alive? Not that many.
Not too many. Do they participate at all after the production, after the filming is ended?
No, they do press. Cut? I mean, you know, some of them do press, not all of them, but they're all willing to do interviews and have their pictures taken, and, you know, they have a certain amount of celebrity, you know, when the programs go, they go out on television in the United Kingdom. So, yes, they do all that sort of stuff, some more willingly than others, but they do it.
How long do you spend with each person?
It depends, really, because, again, it has to have a kind of self-imposed editing. I mean, some people have incredibly rich or dramatic 7 years and others don't, and I try and, you know, go in thinking that rather than just shooting hundreds of hours of stuff of everybody doing everything. It depends. I go to Australia. One of them, Paul, is in Australia, so I usually spend a few more days with him because the journey is so difficult. But when I'm in London and three or four of them live in London, I maybe spend a couple of days with them, but not a huge amount.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really remarkable series, and we're big fans. And
oh, thank you.
We can't wait for the next one. So
I actually can wait for the next one. Like, every time I watch, like, I see my life ahead, right ahead of me, because I do identify.
Yeah.
Because emotionally, I've gotten to know these guys, and I'm ready with the lump in my throat from the moment go, and so I have, I feel like I have a stake in it, in this, as so many of the people that have been following the segment. And then also, because you do see yourself in the Tonys and the Knicks and the Simons and the Pauls.
Yeah, I think you do. I think that's the power of. You know, I do too. I mean, I've ceased to become the filmmaker and become an audience at some point. And then I look at it and see, you know, how my thoughts on how I was as a parent or as a husband, or, you know, how I dealt with career decisions or with friendship and all that. I mean, a lot of it makes me ask questions all the time about my own life. Nothing that I want to share with anybody, but, I think that's the power of it. These are ordinary lives, but they're presented in such a unique way because, you know, there's no sort of riffing about the past, because the past is there on film for us all to see, you know, so you can't fantasize about what you might have been or what you wanted to be, because there it is what you were.
And you really hope for the best for all of them. I mean, I really want them to be happy, and it's very powerful that,
and they're all decent people, you know, which, again, they were chosen with such little care. You know, that they weren't vetted or anything like this. And
there's that one scene where Nick and Susie are sitting together. Yeah. And I was like, oh, are they together? I got so excited. Yeah.
Well, that was their idea. And I thought, oh, my God, it's just, A, will they think what you just thought? And B, will I wreck both interviews by having, but it worked very well.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
and
nice.
As I said, I had to agree to it because they said that's what we want to do.
It's nice to see them interact with each other, because you don't really.
And she's very difficult to interview. You know, my history with her as an interviewer is not good, and so this gave her the confidence to be more open, and you know,
it made her feel more comfortable that she was not.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Michael, Sir Michael Apted. I appreciate your participating in this interview and being on the other side of the.
My pleasure. I live by the sword and I die by the sword. You were very kind to me.
Well, you don't get to see Final Edit in this particular thing, but
I have to trust you.
Yeah. It's quite a thrill to have had your participation today. 56 Up is actually playing now. And it will be in New York, and then I think it's coming to Los Angeles.
Yes, it goes to Los Angeles in
the next week.
Couple of weeks, and then it'll roll through. It's in Canada at the moment, and move into the Midwest and whatever, and make its hopefully slow path across the country. It'll go on to DVD as a next stage, and then it'll play on PVS, I think, this autumn. And then, you know, then we'll increase the box set, so you have all the whole eight of them in one box.
Again, I appreciate your coming on Filmwax Radio. Thank
you. Pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's how a person, any person, how they change. It's not an absolute accurate picture of me. but it's a picture of somebody.